Welcome back to the Psalms, everyone. Psalm 75 is a judgment psalm. I have to tell you, when I started typing the script, I accidentally misspelled Psalms, and I nearly welcomed you back to the Slams with a silent P at the beginning. Which gave me an idea. If there's such a thing as slam poetry, why not slam psalms, spelled pa-slam pa-psalms? Although, now that I've said it out loud, I'm having second thoughts. So, bad idea? Probably. But hear me out. Slam poetry is often intensely emotional, which definitely fits the Psalms. But I guess it breaks down when it's the sort of slam that tears others down and boasts and brags on self. A certain arrogance. But interestingly enough, Psalm 75 is about just that. Man's arrogance. Mankind's exaltation of self over others and against God. The introduction tells us that it's another psalm from Asaph, and he wrote this one to the tune of a song called Do Not Destroy. Almost sounds like a heavy metal tune, or maybe the movie score to a war epic. While studying, I happened to hear U2's Bullet the Blue Sky, and the somber and brooding mood fit well. Let's dive in at verse 1. We praise you, God, we praise you, for your name is near. People tell of your wonderful deeds. Asaph opens with praise. Why? Because God's name is near. That's an interesting phrase. The nearness of God is always a wonder to me. But why his name? Because name is personal. Name is someone you can call on when you need them. I praise God because I can be anywhere, anytime, in any trouble, and I can call on Jesus. He's there. He's with me. And he says, people tell of your wonderful deeds. In light of the subject ahead, of the arrogant who boast of their own great works, Asaph sets the tone with a declaration of the wonder of God's great deeds. In verse 2, you say, I choose the appointed time. It is I who judge with equity. That appointed time is the time of judgment. God sets the date. Notice that Asaph is speaking to God, but he's careful to clarify that he will not put words in God's mouth. You say this, Lord. This is your word. And certainly, God declares many times in his word that he chooses the appointed time for judgment, and he will judge with equity. That word is crucial. The Hebrew word indicates straight or level, like a level playing field. When it comes to God's judgment, the field is level. No favorites, no leniency to the rich or over pity for the poor. Equitable, fair, level judgment. In verse 3, when the earth and all its peoples quake, it is I who hold its pillars firm. That verse ends with a Selah, and it's well worth pausing to ponder. There's nothing like an earthquake to humble the high and low. The ground shakes, and in a moment, everyone feels the loss of control, and we're all reminded it is God who holds the pillars firm. Now, the imagery is poetic. I don't think Asaph is attempting a scientific description of Earth's foundation any more than he's talking about a literal earthquake. But the picture is a powerful one. Imagine standing in an ancient structure with great pillars holding a massive stone roof above you, and the ground shakes. Your eyes dart to the pillars. Who will hold them firm? Certainly not you. And when it comes to the pillars of our world and the pillars of your life, only God can hold them firm. And yet, there are those among us who insist that they are perfectly capable of holding up their own pillars. Verse 4. To the arrogant, I say, boast no more. And to the wicked, do not lift up your horns. To the arrogant. The Hebrew word literally means shine, and the same word is used the second time for boast. It can also mean praise, but here it refers to those who praise themselves. To them, the psalmist says, stop shining the light on yourself. And to the wicked, do not lift up your horns. The horn is a key Bible image, and it will be the key image of this psalm. Now, if you're thinking trombone or tuba, it's not that kind of horn. The animal horn has been a symbol of power and strength in cultures around the world from ancient times to today. Think ram's horn or rhinoceros. As I walked through this psalm with a friend, he told me the story of hiking in the Mojave Desert when over a ridge appeared a great bull with massive horns. When that bull lifts its horns, you know those horns mean power. You cannot compete. Yet from ancient times, men have battled those beasts to take their horns, then wielded them and lifted them high in battle as a show of their own strength. We all know that feeling. Today, it's the fist in the air, the chest pounding, the declaration of strength, of power, and defiance against all comers. But here, the Lord tells the wicked, do not lift your horns. And again in verse 5, do not lift your horns against heaven. Do not speak so defiantly. Now there's a picture. The arrogant lift their horns against heaven itself to challenge the Almighty. The Hebrew here literally says, do not speak with a stiff neck. If you've ever tried to pull an ox or even a strong dog where they don't want to go, you know what that stiff neck means. But this is defiance toward God. This is arrogance. In verse 6, no one from the east or the west or from the desert can exalt themselves. Now we see the folly of boasting and arrogance. It's all an attempt to exalt and lift up yourself. But it's like grasping at the air, like climbing on nothing. No one can exalt themselves. Exaltation doesn't come from yourself, nor from some random direction. Verse 7 tells us the true source of exaltation. It is God who judges. He brings one down, he exalts another. It is God, that same God who levels the field and judges with equity. He chooses. He brings one down, he exalts another. But on what basis does he choose? Genesis tells the story of the men who conspired to build a tower at Babel. We shall make our name great. Yet God brought them low. And in the very next chapter, God found a humble man, and he promised Abram that he would make Abram's name great. Proverbs explains, and James and Peter both quote it, God opposes the proud, but gives grace to the humble. Back here in Psalm 75, Asaph introduces another key Bible image in verse 8. In the hand of the Lord is a cup full of foaming wine mixed with spices. He pours it out, and all the wicked of the earth drink it down to its very dregs. This cup is the cup of God's fury. His wrath is collected as a glass of foaming wine. We see it again in Isaiah and Jeremiah. Revelation gives us the full picture. A winepress filled with grapes, but those grapes are the fruit of man's wickedness. Every cruelty, every deception and adultery, every arrogant boast in defiance of God, every act of violence and oppression, all of them grapes in the winepress of God's wrath. The Lord himself treads out the grapes and patiently waits for the wine to ferment. In due time, judgment. And it is poured out upon the wicked as this foaming wine mixed with spice, and they drink it to the dregs. That means to the last drop. Yet in verse 9, as for me, I will declare this forever. I will sing praise to the God of Jacob. The reference to Jacob is intriguing. Jacob, who wrestled the Lord, who was humbled and walked with that limp the rest of his days. The humble praise God, not self. As we saw in verse 1, they tell of his wonderful deeds, not their own. And he is the one, in verse 10, who says, I will cut off the horns of all the wicked, but the horns of the righteous will be lifted up. That final picture is striking. Like a good farmer with a defiant bull. The farmer feeds and cares for the bull, but the bull is defiant. It threatens the weak, threatens to gore. What will a farmer do? He will humble that bull and cut off its horns. You may say, it's just an animal that doesn't know better, but the wicked do know better. God humbles the proud and exalts the humble. Read Psalm 75 and let God do the exalting in your life.
Join us next time as we continue the journey one chapter at a time. And remember, faith comes by hearing and hearing through the word.